Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Helen Keller said, "The best and most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt with the heart." And that quote led one of today's guests, Garrett Zavidas, to Helen Keller's former school, Perkins School for the Blind. When he was there, he met the subject of his documentary, Michelle Smith, a precocious young woman chasing love and freedom. His documentary is called Best and Most Beautiful Things, and it'll be shown at this weekend's Superfest, the world's longest-running disability film festival. Garrett Zavidas began volunteering at the school with a mission to find a compelling story that was not focused on disability. He wanted to find an authentic story about a fascinating person told from his or her point of view. His film, Best and Most Beautiful Things, is just one of many that focus on a wide range of fascinating people and issues, including a deaf superhero, a blossoming friendship between two blind women, the impact of natural disasters on people with disabilities, and racism in the deaf community. Joining me today to talk about how disability is a creative force in cinema and culture are three guests. Garrett Zavidas is director of Best and Most Beautiful Things. That film will be shown on October 22nd at 6 o'clock at the Magnus Collection of Jewish Art and Life in Berkeley. And Garrett joins us on the line from Boston. Hi, Garrett. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate that introduction, and it's a complete honor to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. Thank you for joining us. We're also joined today by Alex Locust. He's completing his graduate degree in Masters of Clinical Rehabilitation and Mental Health Counseling at San Francisco State. Since 2015, Alex has served as a judge for the Superfest Film Fest, and he joins me in studio. Hi, Alex. Thank you for coming in.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
Great to have you. And Catherine Kudlick is professor of history and director of the Paul K. Longmore Institute on Disability at San Francisco State, one of the co-hosts of Superfest. Catherine served as a judge for this year's competition, and Catherine also joins me in studio. Hi, Catherine. Thank you for coming back. Nice to see you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Well, so this is a film festival that is run and put on by and for people with disabilities. And I want to start off on a positive note for once. Catherine, just talk about the film festival. It's a really great time for people with disabilities because it's a time for people to really come together and, you know, have a joyous time in watching these films.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful opportunity. But, you know, if you think about the movie-going experience for most of the time in mainstream movies, it's, you know, chairs bolted to the floor. There's maybe two places in the theater for one wheelchair by itself. And there may or may not be audio description of films. So if you're a person with a vision impairment, you have to deal with an 18-year-old that may or may not find the device. And if they find the device, it may or may not work. And what we wanted to do was basically make the movie-going experience different and have the disability experience be central to it. So, you know, we have movable chairs. We have, you know, so people with wheelchairs can sit with their friends. People with vision impairments, everybody hears the audio description. In fact, this year we're experimenting with for people that really just can't, for the reasons of disability, deal with hearing the audio description, that is the narration of what's visually happening in the film. We have that be the opt-out thing rather than the norm for everybody. So it's a different experience of going to the movies for everybody, and there's real joy, real camaraderie, a real sense of engagement and excitement, because we never get to be in our community with all sorts of people too, and we call the shots, and we get to do it,
and with all kinds of stories being told.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Alex, you were just telling me on the way over about your experience coming to Superfest for the first time last year.
Yeah, it's such a powerful experience to be in such an organic space. You know, I think about other communities or kind of cultures, like, you know, some sports fans have, you know, watch parties, and other people can go to, like, you know, go out to the club. And this is kind of like a space where people with disabilities can just kind of, like, meet and hang out and, like, celebrate together. And this, like, it's not shoehorned. It's kind of like we all want to go, and we're all getting this really, you know, fabulous experience of seeing these narratives that aren't being told, that aren't being showcased, and see other people with disabilities produce and create and be successful and celebrated for that. Hmm.
You know, Catherine, you said something about the experience of going to a movie on a regular night. And you're right. The areas for people with wheelchairs are in the very back. And I remember, I think it was maybe 6 months ago or so, my mom just wasn't feeling well. And so we got her my grandma's old wheelchair, and I brought her to this theater in Marin. And it was just... it took a lot to get to her mm-hmm. seat. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had to tell people when you first walked in, we've got a wheelchair, where do we go? We had to go to the other side of the theater. And then we had to go on the, you know, walking around people. Everyone had to move. Everyone was staring at her. And it really, she got mad and she said, what are you looking at? I mean, it's just so interesting when you're in that position. Mm-hmm. And you might notice it in passing, but until you're in that position, you don't realize how difficult it is just to do things that most people take for granted.
Yeah, so, and it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, right. That's the other piece of it. So one of the joys of Superfest is not just that it's, you know, people with disabilities coming together, but it's people without disabilities understanding mm-hmm. that there can be this different world, there can be a different set of, you know, experiences, not just in terms of where you are at the theater, but in terms of film content, in mm-hmm. terms of engagement, all of that stuff, it reinforces each other. So what's exciting is, you know, if you're somebody that's used to going to the movies in a certain way, you come to Superfest and it's like, whoa, there's a whole other way to be mm-hmm. here, you know, and a whole other way to think about film and experience film and, you know, to engage with content.
Yeah. And it for people without disabilities, it's kind of opening everybody's minds. But I think Kathy's speaking to maybe sometimes this idea of like, oh, I'll sit in a wheelchair for, you know, an hour and now I'll understand and I get it. And it was so hard to get around, you know, and it's more like this is a way to learn about the disability experience without, you know, kind of like playing pretend. You know, you're mm-hmm. seeing how people live, you're seeing the experience, and it's just kind of like sharing in culture and exchanging can be much more of an impactful experience than like trying to make it happen.
Mm. And Garrett, you're the director of the documentary Best and Most Beautiful Things. It's a documentary about a 20-year-old woman named Michelle Smith. Before we talk about Michelle and the process in making this film and why you made it, what does it mean to you to have your film shown in the Superfest Film Festival?
And for our whole team, it was one of the highlights of this whole experience. Knowing that the festival, that all the jurors have a disability, it just meant that everything that we've been working towards has worked, and that we really, Michelle has been such an integral part of the process. You know, it's making it, having it her voice, and that took constant conversations. And also, there's a teacher in our film named Jeff Migliozzi. He is Michelle's teacher at Perkins School for the Blind, and Jeff is blind himself. And Jeff's a very important part of the story, and I would have conversations on a weekly basis for the last 6 years of Jeff, you know, tapping into, you know, his consciousness about what we were doing. And so I feel like it was validation for our team to get into this wonderful film festival. So,
and I was checking out your Facebook page, and you have been traveling to different film festivals with Michelle. She's legally blind. She's been diagnosed on the autism spectrum. And so you met her at Helen Keller's former school, Perkins School for the Blind?
Yes, I did. When I was sitting there, I was thinking that I wondered if I could make a documentary that was focused on what was right in the world and not what was wrong. And so I literally just Googled the word beauty, and that Helen Keller quote, that amazing one that you quoted at the beginning of the program, came up, and it struck me that Helen Keller had gone to school pretty close to me at Perkins School for the Blind. And then when I did a little more research, I saw that I read about this unemployment rate for the blind. It was 75%. Of people visually impaired are unemployed.
Wow.
Still to this day. And it struck me that must be because people with disabilities are still the other in our society. And the only way to do that is to humanize. So I thought if I could just go over there and volunteer and maybe find a compelling story that was not focused on blindness. And when I was there, I was kind of questioning what I was doing there, and I wasn't I think I was right to be there. And Michelle actually introduced herself to me, and just after 5 minutes of, you know, experiencing her indomitable kind of positive spirit, I asked her if she'd like to be in a documentary, and she said yes. And that was 6 years ago. I never thought it would take us to this path, but...
Wow. It's just amazing that this Helen Keller quote, again, it's the best and most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt with the heart. And now I'm at bestandmostbeautifulthings.com, your beautiful website. Mm-hmm. Your film has won so many awards.
Thank you. We're so excited about it. And I think it's because it's coming from Michelle's perspective. It took 6 years to make because it was a friendship and a relationship that built for 6 years with Michelle. And I think people come, you know, the whole idea was to have someone sit for 90 minutes and try to put them in someone with a disability's shoes. And that's what I think happened. We're ecstatic. But like I said, being at Superfest is one of the highlights of this whole experience. And I just want to say accessibility is a big thing for us. We're very proud of the audio description that we have. The company is called Audio Eyes, and they've done this. They're artists themselves. And we've tried to raise awareness for accessibility as we've gone around the country with these to the different festivals. And when we screened in Boston at the Independent Film Festival of Boston, we actually did a screening where we had the audio description come through the main speakers, like at Superfest, and we had closed captioning on the screen so that everybody could sit next to each other, like Catherine was saying. So,
a number of films were submitted. Catherine, you're one of the judges for Superfest. What really struck you about Garrett's film, Best and Most Beautiful Things?
I thought it was just great, like, you know, that what he just said came through, the idea that he was taking her perspective and really allowing her to drive the film and sort of, you know, it wasn't about this, you know, this inspirational story about a feel-good, you know, girl who overcame odds. That's usually the sort of the typical portrayal of this. But also, it was somebody that was engaging with stuff that people don't always associate with disability. I mean, she's experimenting in kinky sex, and you know, you always think of the innocent little blind girl and all this, and the same. And it's interesting that Helen Keller has come up because she was often portrayed. You know, we read those children's stories, and you know, growing up, and she's always this little girl that learns to say wawa at the pump, and she never grows up, and you never learn that she's like a disability rights, workers' rights, women's rights, socialist. Yeah. You know, you don't learn any of this stuff.
So,
I mean, I think she kind of would be intrigued and really kind of on board with this film also.
I should have added that in my intro. Helen Keller, the socialist, once said, the best and most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even touched. Alex, what struck you the most about the documentary Best and Most Beautiful Things?
I completely agree with Kathy and with what Garrett's mission was of just kind of showing, you know, a story and not anchoring it just to the disability. But I think he also, you know, showcases it and highlights it. I think when people try to discuss disability, they kind of overcompensate and they'll completely avoid it, you know, because they're like, oh, I don't want to anchor it to the story. But then they're missing out on how much disability does impact their life. And kind of, I love the intersections of her blindness and her, you know, her autism and the kinky sex. Because I think, you know, already blindness or disability, like physical disabilities, kind of are asexualized or desexualized,
yeah.
I guess. And then on top of that, then you're thinking about a developmental disability that, you know, people get very uncomfortable thinking about them having sex and being sexual. And then there's a scene where she's speaking with her teacher, and he's kind of basically trying to shy her away from this community that she's found a lot of home in, this kinky community that's been really welcoming and powerful for her. And she kind of, like, lays it down. She teaches him about, like, the power of kink and the consent involved. And so it's, I think, when you see a scene earlier in the movie where she's playing with her Monster High dolls, which is this very, like, youthful, kind of innocent thing, and then later is schooling an adult about how to have, like, safe, kinky sex, you know, and her power in those situations, it's really, it was just, it's groundbreaking in a really good way, not the kind of like groundbreaking to be groundbreaking.
And Garrett, your film has been shown at so many film festivals. As I said, you've received awards from South by Southwest, Hot Docs, the Mill Valley Film Festival. I mean, just all across the country. What's been the reaction from audience members who maybe don't have experience with disabilities or people with disabilities?
It's been so wide ranging that it's, I can't tell you how excited we've been. I mean, we've had, there's mothers come up to us after and say, and also people that work with people with disabilities, younger kids, that where the mothers will say they're inspired by Michelle's mother in the film, who kind of does not overprotect her and kind of lets her be, gives her some freedom. And so we've heard from mothers like that. We've heard from young people that have disabilities about the empowerment from that, you know, Alex was just talking about. We've heard from people that are working with younger kids that, especially with autism, that say that they're, you know, they're not, the parents aren't letting the kids talk about sex and that kind of thing. And so they're just ecstatic that, you know, they can have these conversations, that this is a conversation starter in that. So, I mean, the last place we were just at, two young gentlemen spoke up. They feel empowered to ask these questions when Michelle's there, because Michelle gives this power to everybody. And they spoke up and said that they have autism and that they spoke from a neurodiversity, you know, thing, and that, you know, questioning normal. We've had someone spoke up and said that he had schizophrenia and that this made him feel, you know, that he's marginalized. And so that we've had a wide ranging kind of response that we're excited about. And I just want to quickly say that how that this whole, the sexual aspect came into the film, it was 2 years into the filmmaking process when it started to come in. You know, Michelle was telling me little by little about this, and at first I was thinking, you know, I did not know anything about it, and I was like, well, I don't think that will be in the film. And at this point, Michelle had graduated Perkins, and she was isolated at home, like so many people like with a disability. This is what happens after they graduate. They call it falling off the cliff, because if they can't find a job, they ended up isolated at home. And when she started telling me about this, I told our producer, Ariana Garfinkel, that this is happening. And Ariana said to me, well, it sounds like she had found community. And I said, well, actually, yes, you're right. She found community. This was a BDSM, local BDSM community that was very accepting. And so then we also saw Michelle started gaining empowerment from this, you know, for this community. So it was a no-brainer. We just had to include this in the film. And Michelle, when Michelle said that, that's what she wanted it in the film, that would be true to her. That's how it came about. Hmm.
That is Garrett Zavidas. He is director of Best and Most Beautiful Things. It's a documentary about a 20-year-old woman, Michelle Smith. She's quirky and charming, legally blind, and diagnosed on the autism spectrum with big dreams and a lot of passions. And that film screens October 22nd. That is this Saturday at the Magnus Collection of Jewish Art and Life in Berkeley at 6 o'clock. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. And the festival runs this Saturday and Sunday there in Berkeley, and then on Sunday at the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco. You can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org or superfestfilm.com. Today we're also joined by Catherine Kudlick, professor of history and director of the Paul K. Longmore Institute on Disability at San Francisco State, one of the co-hosts of Superfest. She serves as a judge for this year's competition. And Alex Locust is completing his graduate degree in the Masters of Clinical Rehabilitation and Mental Health Counseling Program at SF State. And he has been a judge since 2015, since last year. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. If you're a fan of Superfest, why do you think it has gone this long? I mean, it's the longest world's longest-running disability film festival. If you've been there, what really strikes you about the festival? If you have a disability, what do you think about how people with disabilities are represented in the mass media? 866-798-8255. And what about the stories of people with disabilities that are being told in the media? What stories are not being told? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet @yourcallradio. Catherine, a couple of the other films that sound really good for me are kind of political. The one, Double Discrimination, is a personal documentary examining whether racism exists in the deaf community. And it's told from director Rinku Barpaga's personal background and perspective. This is not something that we hear about. Even though we're having this conversation about racism in the United States, we're not talking about racism within the disability community.
Yeah, that's true. This particular film is from the UK, so they're kind of more open to discussing some of these issues. And it's a really complex story. I think it's initially what you might think is it's just all the white people think it's not racist and all the people of color don't. And it's way more complicated than that. As he goes through and starts talking to people individually, he'll just start asking them and they'll start explaining. And it's all about your preconceptions. And I think at the core of it is this idea that if you understand one form of difference, you should understand all of them. And for some people, those differences open doors to understanding other differences. And for other people, it's way more complicated, and they need to try to maybe position themselves against other differences because there's only so much difference that any person can take. Alex, I would be curious from the student perspective what you think of that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, racism in America is very on everyone's minds. So I think it's a really topical and important film. I want to, give him credit for. I think it's a great conversation starter. You know, it doesn't feel like propaganda, where he's basically like, racism exists and it's a thing. You know, he shows a diversity of stories of people who have experienced racism, people who think it's, gone by the wayside. He introduces these concepts of how immigrant families have been affected, so kind of how that identity kind of plays into the whole interaction. And one of the scenes that stood out to me was he interviews somebody pretty high up in one of the deaf administrations, and it's an older white man who kind of is on the defense the whole time and kind of just puts it off, and he says, oh, we'll figure it out, or I'll have to talk to somebody, or, we're kind of thinking it. And to not only go to the people, and speak to them and find out what their personal experiences are, but also higher up and hear that aspect too. It just kind of shows how that stuff can trickle down. If people on top don't know.
Well, there's a great graphic with the film Double Discrimination. So it's a bunch of white birds sitting on like an electrical line, and then one dark bird in front of them, and there are signs behind the white birds that say, go back to your own country, deaf immigrants not welcome, keep off our deaf jobs. Mm-hmm. And that film will be showing this Saturday at 6 o'clock at the Magnus Collection of Jewish Art and Life. Actually, you'll see that one. There's a compilation of films. There's about three films in each section. You'll see Double Discrimination along with Like If, and the description of that is, an unlikely heroine must deal with a particular epidemic. Will she alone be able to save the world? And then that'll also be showing with Best and Most Beautiful Things. This sounds like a really nice, a good package of films. They're all great, but this one especially sounds great. Saturday, October 22nd at 6 o'clock, Magnus Collection of Jewish Art and Life in Berkeley. And today we are talking about Superfest, the world's longest-running disability film festival. And you can find more information about it at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation today on Your Call. You can call us on the telephone. You can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. yourcallradio.org, or you can go to the yourcallradio.org website. You can also tweet us at yourcallradio. Our telephone number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255 if you'd like to participate in today's show by telephone.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Tonight is the last presidential debate before the November 8th election. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will be meeting on stage for the last time, and we will be opening the lines during tomorrow's show to take your calls. If you watched tonight, what did you think? Well, we can only imagine what we're going to see tonight. So we definitely want to hear from you tomorrow. And then at 11 o'clock on our special election show, we're going to be joined by San Francisco Supervisor Jane Kim, who is running against Supervisor Scott Wiener for the state Senate. They are vying to take Mark Leno's seat, who's being termed out. We had Mark Leno on last week. Scott Wiener was on the week before. And tomorrow, Jane Kim will be on. If you have any questions for her, please email us. feedback@yourcallradio.org, and you can give us a call tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Today, we are talking about Superfest, the world's longest-running disability film festival, and it's taking place this Saturday and Sunday in Berkeley and San Francisco, and you can find information at yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Catherine Kudlick, professor of history and director of the Paul K. Longmore Institute on Disability at San Francisco State, one of the co-hosts of Superfest. She's also a judge. Alex Locust is completing his graduate degree in the Master's of Clinical Rehabilitation and Mental Health Counseling program at SF State. He's also a judge. And Garrett Zavidis is director of the documentary Best and Most Beautiful Things. It's about Michelle Smith, a 20-year-old who's legally blind and diagnosed on the autism spectrum. It focuses on her dreams and passions. It'll be showing on Saturday, 6 o'clock, at the Magnus Collection of Jewish Art and Life in Berkeley. And if you would like to join us, if you have any questions or comments for our guests, if you have a disability and you'd like to talk about what we see or don't see in the media, what we hear or don't hear in the media about people with disabilities, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And let's hear from Greg calling from, I believe, in San Francisco. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
It's Palo Alto, but that's
sorry.
Okay. Just a couple of things. I'm really happy that the festival is taking place. But I want to ask a question. I'm disabled. I've been disabled for many, many years, living on and off of SSI. And I'm wondering, first of all, I have a couple of questions. One is if there's any documentary that is in this year's festival or people are aware of that deals with the issue of people with disabilities and trying to survive on SSI, Social Security Disability. Because I can tell you on a day-to-day basis, it is an incredible struggle just to stay alive on SSI. And to me, it's a documentary waiting to happen if it hasn't already happened. Just how you're treated like a criminal by the Social Security system, despite the fact that you're disabled and just trying to stay alive. So I'm hoping that maybe that might be something that somebody might be interested in doing, because it is a horrific system, and it doesn't need just change. I mean, it just they should start from scratch and try to set something up that really deals with people as human beings who are disabled and trying to just stay alive from day to day.
Yeah, it's such a good point. And I want to just say, because tonight's debate, one of the topics is, quote, entitlements. So you know they're going to talk about Social Security and Medicare, and I'm sure one of the comments is going to be, well, Social Security, we're not going to have the money, so what are you going to do to deal with it, right? What they don't mention, and I bet they're not going to mention this tonight, is that the average monthly check is $1,166. And a lot of people solely rely on that check to get by. Mm-hmm. I always bring up these facts because for some reason, when the media talk about Social Security, these facts are usually never mentioned. So what about that, Catherine? Are there any films that deal with the struggles?
I don't know of any. I think Greg is right that, you know, this should definitely be a topic of film. And it's sort of interesting because most of the films that are made about disability tend to focus on, you know, the individual overcoming their disability, when in fact a lot of the disablement, if you can use that word, comes from dealing with these systems. And, you know, mm-hmm. if you think about the simulation exercises that Alex was mentioning earlier, where you're supposed to either ride around in a wheelchair and pretend you're disabled or go blindfolded and pretend you're disabled. They never make you go wait in line for Social Security or force you to budget a certain amount of money to get by every month. So I think if we're really going to understand the disability experience, we need to really be thinking about it in terms of systems, not just in terms of individuals overcoming something tragic. The system is tragic.
The system is tragic, and we have 10,000 people turning 65 every day in this country. And so if we don't deal with this, it's going to get even more tragic. As a young person, Alex, what are your thoughts on that issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think Greg's right. It's really awful, just the system that's set up. And, I mean, I think you mentioned $1,000-some for the average check. I think California's is less than that.
Even less?
I think so. It's like, I can't remember. But, you know, if you think about San Francisco rent, even Oakland rent, you know, that's your like housing money maybe.
Right.
You know? And there's a lot of difficulty around this idea of making more than, you know, there's a certain limit. If you make more than, they're gonna reduce the amount of benefits that they'll give you. So it seems kinda counterintuitive of if you're trying to work and support yourself, but you need help in these systems and they're gonna now take money away when really, you know, it's like if you want people to succeed, like help raise them up so that they can get a sustainable, like not just sustainable surviving, but like thrive and really like live high quality life rather than this like perpetual need to just kind of subsist and like hope for that next check, because, you know, those are stories that aren't being told.
Right. And hope that your rent-controlled apartment isn't taken away from you. Garrett, it seems like, I mean, we get calls about this consistently. This is a movie that's just waiting, a documentary that's just waiting to be told or made.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I mean, one of the things, the reason why I think it was important to make, I early on I thought about the TV show Will and Grace, which was about characters that had characters in it that were gay, but the TV show was not focused on their sexuality. So that was kind of what I was hoping for in this film. And the film is not focused on her blindness. It's more of Michelle, of this young, beautiful person. But one thing I wanted to say about that SSI thing is Michelle is on SSI, and she makes less than that $1,000, and she is struggling still. She still does not have a job. It's still really hard for her. Hmm. But she is living independently, and there is a disincentive for her, because if she even gets a part-time job, which they like Alex said, they take away the money. So that's a major, major problem right there. And I just want to say one other thing is I was at a lunch at the United Nations in Boston, and I was talking, there was a big Republican donor that was sitting next to me, a businessman, and he was asking about the film. He goes, and as I told him a little about the film, he goes, I just want to get, you know, break it to you, the bad news to you, that people don't want to give any more money for entitlements. So if you're looking for more entitlements, and I said, actually, what we're looking for is people to hire more people with disabilities, so they're not, there will be less entitlements. And he said, yes, that has to happen. You know, he said, so it's the paradigm that has to change. And people that are listening to this program have to hire someone with a disability. Mm-hmm. It's extremely important. We have to see that it's a diversity issue. And I know Catherine talks about this. I read Catherine's work, and it's a diversity issue. Someone with a disability will enrich your workplace, enrich your life. It's not about accommodation. So.
And it's also about rethinking what an entitlement is. I mean, it's such weird words. I mean, we don't think when the 1% gets their 10th tax break, is that an entitlement? Well, hello, yeah, it is.
Right.
And we don't – somehow we use this vocabulary of entitlement for people that already have so little, and it just seems weird to me. I've never understood that.
It's so true. And Garrett, I'm so glad that you brought up the fact that, for example, Michelle and so many other young people – who are blind or have a disability are living off of SSI, which is, again, such a tiny monthly allotment. And you said earlier in the show, and this needs to be repeated, that 75% of people who are visually impaired are unemployed. So, that we talk a lot about older people who are reliant on Social Security, but what about people across the board who have a disability?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for calling in, Greg. I am definitely going to do a show about that. It's so important. Another film that really stood out to me and I really want to see is The Right to be Rescued. It's a short documentary about the impact of natural disasters on people with disabilities. The description says often their needs are left out of emergency plans, and as a result, they're left behind. During Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, many people with disabilities died because of this lack of planning. This documentary tells their stories and what New Orleans and other cities are doing to make sure it never happens again.
Yeah, we have a panel discussion about that, and we'll have people that are involved in emergency preparedness locally, and people have been thinking about this, and it's part of the planning that more and more people are integrating into emergency discussions. The thing that I want to point out, it's a really interesting thing. I think that they should be putting people with disabilities at the head of these discussions about emergency preparedness. When non-disabled people are imagining it, they think, oh, well, they have a disability. They can't get anywhere. They can't do anything. If you think about what preparations need to be in place, people with disabilities are exactly the ones that know what's not working and know how to think about systems that are broken and how to work around them. So, I mean, you know, to get to kind of tie the earlier conversation about emergency preparedness with the idea of unemployment, I mean, if cities were really smart, they would have somebody on their team. Any entity would have somebody on their team at the top level, somebody on their team with a disability planning for emergency preparedness.
Yeah. I mean, I think that really gets to the idea of people with disabilities are adaptable.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be by nature. It's not, you know, a choice after a while with these systems that we're talking about. It's if you want to make it day to day, you have to figure out how to be flexible and adapt to change. So like Kathy's saying, you know, these are, you know, people with disabilities, we're perfect for these roles because we know it, we live it. This is our day-to-day. We can figure out the flaws and stuff like that. And I think Right to be Rescued is really important because in addition to just bringing light to this really important advocacy issue, it starts to touch on, I think, some of the intersectionality that's left out of the conversations around Hurricane Katrina or any disaster where it kind of like, you know, the media zooms in for that time, you know, when it's like everybody feels bad and wants to throw money at it. And then, you know, the vacuum's created and we don't talk about it anymore. But this is addressing disability. You know, I got to interview the director and he talked a lot about, you know, how he wants to kind of open the conversation more about like race and, you know, socioeconomic status and class and disability. Mm-hmm. You know, the stereotypical image of a Hurricane Katrina survivor is kind of like a low SES, you know, black person in New Orleans. But, you know, are we addressing low SES black people with disabilities? Like, how are they impacted? How is that for them not to be able to receive services, not to be able to get out? Like, it's really, you know, intersectionality is really key when we dive into these tougher conversations.
We have done so many shows about Hurricane Katrina, and we even did one on the anniversary recently, and we've never focused on this angle. I have never even read about this angle that many people with disabilities died during Hurricane Katrina because of lack of planning.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the other way to think about all this is people with disabilities are kind of the canaries in the coal mine. They really do show where the system breaks down. It's you know, when you look and see what happens to people with disabilities, that could happen to anyone and everyone.
And so many people are living with an invisible disability.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Especially, I mean, what you hear about people living with pain and who get hurt on the job, I mean, this is, it's just, it seems to be growing.
Yeah.
Right? So this film, The Right to be Rescued, is showing on Sunday, October 23rd at 1 o'clock at the Contemporary Jewish Museum. It'll be shown with Zoofs and The Sea Reminds Me and, oh, a lot of films in this one, Hear
Shorts.
Me and Awake, a lot of shorts. Mm-hmm. And you can find information at superfestfilm.com. Today we are talking about the world's longest running disability film festival. It takes place this Saturday in Berkeley and Sunday in San Francisco. Find information at yourcallradio.org or superfestfilm.com. We're joined by Garrett Zavidis, director of Best and Most Beautiful Things, a documentary about a 20-year-old woman named Michelle who's legally blind and diagnosed on the autism spectrum. It looks at her dreams, her passions. That screens October 22nd at 6 o'clock excuse me, at the Magnus Collection of Jewish Art and Life in Berkeley. Alex Locust is a judge with Superfest. He's completing his graduate degree at SF State. Catherine Kudlick is also a judge and professor of history and director of the Paul K. Longmore Institute on Disability at SF State. Bruce wrote in and wanted you to tell us a little bit about Paul Longmore.
Ah, yeah. So Paul Longmore was a professor and scholar and disability rights activist who taught at San Francisco State until he died unexpectedly in 2010. So he was a force of nature. He published several scholarly books. The most recent one is called Telethons, Spectacle, Disability, and the Politics of Charity, and or the Business of Charity, I should say. And it was published by Oxford University Press and really looks at sort of media representations of disabled people and how that shapes all of our thinking around disability. Mm. He was a polio survivor himself and a very fierce advocate for disability rights and scholarship.
And speaking of media, I wanted to ask you, I mean, it's a big question, but what are your thoughts about how things have changed? I was struck when Anastasia Somoza, a disability rights advocate, spoke on the first day of the Democratic National Convention. And she got so much national attention. And she's been a disability rights activist since she was very young. And so I just wonder, what was the significance of that, Catherine?
I would say it's very significant, and it shouldn't be significant,
right.
Both.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really excited that the convention really put so much about disability in its platform and in its accessibility and in its presenters and whatnot. I would love to live to see the day where it was just naturally that people with disabilities were part of this entire structure and you didn't have to say, wow, there's a person with a disability. Because if you think about it in terms of women, we've come a long ways where you don't say, wow, there was a woman, or, you know, and we don't even say anymore that a woman is running for, you know, could be president, is likely to be president. That kind of has fallen out of the conversation too. But, you know, maybe we'll get to the point where there'll be multiple possibilities for imagining this. So I think it's great. I think it's a step in the right direction for sure, but I would love to have it not be even something we thought about. It would just be woven in mm-hmm. naturally.
And you're not even getting questions about climate change during the debate, so we're definitely not going to get a question about disabilities. But according to Vox, Hillary Clinton has a detailed plan for policies relevant to autism. It includes commitments to expand funding for integrated employment opportunities and investment in services for autistic adults. She also endorsed the Disability Integration Act, which is legislation designed to create an enforceable right for community-based supports. I'm not sure what that is. Do you know what that is?
I believe it's got to do with community funding people in these programs.
Okay.
I don't know the details either.
Yeah. Do you know anything else about her platform on these issues?
I do know that she's really mapped them out, and she tries to integrate disability in a lot of her conversations. She doesn't just, you know, tack it on at the end. She tries to weave it in throughout. Boy, I would sure love to invite her to Superfest. If you're free between now and election time, come on down.
I would love to say that we also know that the other candidate, Donald Trump, who has made fun of someone with a disability mm-hmm. because he obviously sees disability as weakness, and whereas I think Hillary Clinton sees it as a strength. You know, with Michelle Smith in our movie is, you know, her disabilities make up part of who she is and part of the strength that gives her the strength. And so that's a big difference between these two candidates. One sees disability as weakness and one sees it as strength.
Well, and I think also in the past just day or two, a couple of editorials have come out saying, you know, that he's a very ableist candidate. People have talked about the other sort of offensive things that he's done vis-a-vis women and race and religion and all the rest. But it's only now that the issue of ableism is coming up, and it's come out in a highly, you know, highly visible way in an editorial op-ed in the Los Angeles Times, an article in New York Magazine. So people are finally starting to talk about that part, too.
Yeah.
And I, with disability in the political sphere, I think when you look historically, only was it in the 70s, I believe, there was kind of like an accessibility act put into place. So, you know, prior to that, voting didn't have to be accessible. So, you know, if you think about systems again and keeping people out and making change, you know, for a woman with a disability to be speaking in 2016 seems, it shouldn't be groundbreaking, but that's only like 40 so years after people with disabilities were guaranteed the right to vote, you know. So when we're talking about inalienable rights, you know, but we can't vote, we can't make change, we can't keep people like Trump out if we can't vote. So it's important to think about just how these things, again, like it's systemic.
And that's great, Alex. And I just wanted to say one other thing that that John Vanier from the L'Arche movement, he talks about how our world is not a world of competition. And it's not just a world of competition. And I think someone like Donald Trump thinks of everything as competition and power. And, you know, our world is more about getting together, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not independence, it's interdependence. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we should be striving toward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we have time for one more caller. Let's hear from Cindy in San Leandro. Hi, Cindy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks so much for taking my call. This has been a fantastic show, fantastic panel, and fantastic discussion. My question is this. Is there anything, any films about this subject in the festival or in the works? I work as a PT in physical disabilities for 22 years. I've been working in this field, and I come across this subject of how to educate the public when someone is with a disability, is in public, and someone who approaches them asking if they want help or asks them about their disability, which for many people with disabilities seems like a very rude thing and the onus shouldn't be on them to educate the public. But I think it's a very important topic to be able to educate someone who's innocently approaching them to debunk some of these to take care of some of the ignorance or the lack of knowledge of the public about disability. And so just wondering if there's a film that talks about this very subject, and I know everyone with a disability is going to have a different opinion and a different approach, but just in general, I think it would be great to just have more discussion about that, because some people are put off because how their question is answered when they approach someone with a disability, and sometimes it happens all in innocence. Mm-hmm. But again, the onus shouldn't be on you to educate, but... Mm-hmm. So I think you get my point.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Cindy. Alex, do you want to take that?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great point, Cindy. I was born as an amputee, so I very much have had plenty of my life experiences of those educating moments that you're describing. And one of the films at Superfest is called Terminal Device. I'm a little biased. It's one of my favorite films in the festival, but... It is kind of an autobiographical exploration of kind of a man who has a prosthetic arm. You know, it's one of the prosthetics with the hook hands. And he uses kind of like popular media clips and things from movies and TV to tell his own story through living with this prosthetic hook arm. And so in doing so, he's not only talking about those awkward moments and those uncomfortable times of being very visibly disabled and having to deal with how that impacts people, but as a viewer, you're not watching his life play out. You're watching things that you've already seen in a new context. So you're seeing Captain Hook. You're seeing, you know, different things from other movies like Edward Scissorhands and all these things that are very, like, just... involved in our popular consciousness, and I don't think that we think about them as disability or in the way that it impacts us. And so when you're seeing the way that you've seen something before, it's kind of reprogramming, like, oh, I've been thinking about Captain Hook as this evil man this whole time, you know, but what does that tell me about disability? How does that impact the way that I see other people with hook hands? So it's maybe not addressing those education moments directly, but I think it challenges the audience to kind of reevaluate and think about not only how we consume popular media, but how we interact with people with disabilities in general.
And that film, Terminal Device, is showing Saturday at 1 o'clock at the Magnus Collection of Jewish Art and Life in Berkeley. And what would you add, Catherine?
I think these educational moments can happen at just an event like Superfest. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, I know that, you know, just on the street, you're not going to have Superfest with you. But if you've gone to Superfest yourself and you have it inside you, or you've seen some of these films and had some of the conversations, then when you encounter somebody as a non-disabled person who's curious or open or whatever, you could start with something other than, you know, like, whoa, you know, what happened to you? Which the Terminal Device movie makes a big deal of, this girl from Edward Scissorhands constantly coming up. What happened to you? What happened to you? And, you know, I think if you approach things with a sense of curiosity and openness and saying, look, you know you've been asked this 1,000 times, or I know that maybe I'm being forward or whatever. You know, have you ever thought of blah, blah, blah? Or have you, you know, how would you describe something? But you want to have a conversation that's about things other than disability, too. You don't just zero in and just like, whoa.
Right. I don't know your name yet, but yeah, I would like to know everything about exactly, your intimate life.
Exactly. You know, so I think the trick, I think the idea is to be open and curious and to really think about what you're trying to figure out when you enter one of those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Catherine Kudlick is professor of history and director of the Paul K. Longmore Institute on Disability at San Francisco State, one of the co-hosts and judges of Superfest. Alex Locust is a judge at Superfest, getting his graduate degree at San Francisco State. And Garrett Zavitas is director of The Best and Most Beautiful Things, a documentary that screens October 22nd, 6 o'clock at the Magnus Collection of Jewish Art and Life in Berkeley. The festival is the world's longest-running disability film fest. It'll be this weekend in Berkeley and San Francisco. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. Garrett, Alex, and Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, we'll discuss the last presidential debate before Election Day. We'll hash out what Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump said, check facts, provide context, and take your calls. What has this election revealed about the candidates, the media, and our democracy? What was the most telling moment in the debate? Email your questions and comments to feedback@yourcallradio.org and join us live at 10 a.m. with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.